Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Emerging Technologies Overview Conference Call. My name is Sean, and I'll be your coordinator for today. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. We will be facilitating a question-and-answer session toward the end of this conference. If at any time during the call you require assistance, please press star zero, and an operator will be happy to assist you. I would now like to turn the presentation over to your host for today's call, Ms. Gia Felice, Manager of Analysis Relations. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Gia Felice, and I'm with Cisco's Analyst Relations team, and I want to thank you all for taking some time out to join us today. I have with me David C. He's going to be hosting the majority of this call, and he's a Senior Director in Marketing, and he's responsible for our Emerging Technologies area, which is what we want to talk to you about today, because Emerging Technologies for Cisco is a little bit different than the products and solution groups, I think, that you're used to seeing from Cisco Systems. Additionally, there was a presentation that was pushed out to you last night. Hopefully you received that, and that's pretty much what David is going to be referencing for his talk this morning. So David, I'd like to turn it over to you for the remainder of the hour, and if you would host us through your area, that would be great.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Gia, and welcome to everybody to the call. I'm going to spend maybe the next 30 minutes or so and give you a overview of a couple of different topics. First of all, take you through a little bit about Cisco's innovation strategy and give you a sense of how emerging technologies is a strategic component of the company's overall innovation strategy. Second of all, to talk about how the internal venture model works within the Emerging Technologies Group and give you a little bit of an understanding of how we find and evaluate new business opportunities that become emerging technologies for the company. And then give you a sense of some of the results to date so far. So the Emerging Technologies Group has been in operation for just a little bit under 2 years. And so far we've created 4 businesses that are in the market and selling actively today. And we have 5 businesses that are incubating and are building their initial products. And I'll give you a sense of sort of some of the companies in our portfolio. So without much further ado, let me sort of move on to the first topic, which is Cisco's innovation strategy and what led to the formation of the Emerging Technologies Group. A couple of years ago, we did some work with the Sloan School of Business at MIT and really looked at how, you know, Cisco, pursued strategies for along 2 different dimensions. One is how we address different types of market opportunities, both existing, market opportunities in markets that we already played in, so existing markets, and then, you know, what techniques and strategies would we use to address new market opportunities? And the second dimension was, you know, how we deal with different technology areas. So one is to look at, you know, how we deal with existing technologies, ones that are already in our portfolio, and then how we look at disruptive new technology opportunities. And so if you can sort of see the matrix on slide 3, in the area where you have an existing technology and an existing market, so an easy example would be, let's say, switching and routing, then Cisco's tendency is to, you know, develop new versions of the products and, you know, new technologies within that market ourselves. And in some cases, we'll do, you know, acquisitions of usually smaller companies to accelerate time to market in a very specific technology component in that area. When we try to take existing technologies into new market opportunities, then our tendency is to partner because we're trying to gain domain expertise and trying to gain maybe distribution, et cetera. And in some cases, you know, we'll make acquisitions. Now, in areas where there's an opportunity to take advantage of, you know, market transitions and disruptive new technologies, if it's in an existing market, then we have a tendency to acquire. And, you know, a perfect example of that would be, let's say, WebEx, where, you know, their software as a service business model was a disruptive way of delivering web conference, but it was a market that Cisco had already been in with Meeting Place, and so in that case, we chose to acquire. And in some cases, you know, when we don't acquire, we choose to partner. The area where Cisco had a somewhat underdeveloped strategy was looking at new market opportunities, so businesses that Cisco was not in, you know, not in currently, where there was a, you know, technology disruption or technology transition taking place. And historically, you know, the primary strategy in that area was to make financial investments, primarily through our Cisco Ventures arm. And what we realized through the course of working through this is that Cisco, you know, having acquired over 120 companies in the, you know, course of the company's history, has not only acquired but also retained a significant number of entrepreneurs and innovators, you know, a surprising number of whom have stayed with the company. And so we had this base of entrepreneurial talent, but what we lacked was a formalized mechanism for people to pursue their more entrepreneurial ambitions while staying part of the Cisco family. And so what we decided to do was to really create an internal venture model to complement our external venture model. And this internal venture model basically uses venture capital-like methods, but for creating new business units inside of Cisco. So we have many of the same principles and many of the same processes and guidelines as an external venture capital would, but the end result in our case is that we create a new business inside of the company and essentially create a new business unit. So that really led to the formation of the Emerging Technologies Group, and our focus is to act like an internal venture group and to, you know, find and staff and develop and then take to market new business opportunities in new markets for Cisco. Now, just to kind of give you a sense of how this fits with respect to the overall Cisco product portfolio, we did some work with the Chasm Group advisors, that's sort of Jeff Moore and Crossing the Chasm, and really looked at sort of four phases of, you know, sort of the life cycle of businesses inside of pretty much any company. And, you know, it starts with inventing a new business area, and then as it grows, scaling it. And, you know, as that business starts to mature, you reach sort of the optimization zone. And then as, you know, that business starts to decline, then potentially you offload it. Well, if you were to map that to the Cisco product portfolio, we have our foundation technologies, which are switching and routing, and we would place those foundation technologies in the optimize zone. These are very large multi-billion dollar revenue businesses that are achieving, you know, very good growth, certainly great growth on an absolute dollar basis, but, you know, slowing growth on a percentage basis. And, you know, the foundation technologies are growing in sort of you know, single-digit to low double-digit growth range right now. In the sort of scale zone, we would place our advanced technologies, and those are things like unified communications, mobility, data center, security. And in those business areas, you know, we have relatively large businesses, so let's say anywhere from $500 million to, you know, a couple billion dollars in revenue. But those are businesses that still have a great deal of growth potential and are growing at a significant rate. So most of the technologies in our advanced technology portfolio are growing in the sort of mid-double-digit range. But, you know, what we would expect is that as the advanced technologies continue to grow and as those businesses start to mature, they will sort of migrate into and become new foundation technologies and sort of move into that optimized zone. So as we sort of look at this from an overall portfolio management standpoint, what Cisco decided is that we needed, you know, sort of a feeder system for the next generation of advanced technologies. And really that's what the emerging technologies are. So these are, you know, from the ground startup businesses inside of Cisco that have, you know, enormous, you know, business potential and very, very high growth rates, but on a very, very low revenue basis. So these are businesses that, you know, that have, you know, revenue bases in the millions or tens of millions and are growing in the, you know, double digit to in some cases triple digit rates as they, you know, are in an early market opportunity. And over time, we expect the emerging technologies to grow and mature into advanced technologies as the advanced technologies become more foundation technologies. Now, this fits into Cisco's long-term growth strategy. And if you look at the chart on slide 5, you can see the sort of teal color represents the company's revenue history from more or less inception to 2002. You can see the impact of the internet boom and the internet bust. And if you were to sort of map in rough terms, you know, the contribution and growth rate of the foundation technologies, you'll see, you know, a very nice steady growth. Again, low, you know, relatively low on a percentage basis, but, you know, given that these are multi-billion dollar businesses, the absolute revenue growth is quite high. And you can see the impact of the advanced technologies, and as those advanced technologies continue to scale and achieve you know, significant growth rates and then start to mature, you know, you can see that they, you know, provide a significant revenue impact. But again, if you sort of project it over time, those ATs will begin to mature as businesses, their growth rates will slow, you know, slow as their size gets bigger. Then the, you know, the goal is to create new emerging technologies that can start to scale up and actually contribute a significant amount of revenue to the company as they grow and become advanced technologies. So moving on to slide six, let me give you a sense of sort of the math behind this all. Our goal in the next sort of 5 years is to create roughly $6.5 billion in annual revenue based on emerging technologies. And to do that, we believe we need to create about 15 successful emerging technology businesses over the course of the next 5 years. And, of course, they'll all be in various states of development, you know, over that time period. Now, to get to 15 successful businesses, we believe that we need to get to roughly 20 investments. So we're assuming a margin of failure. And, of course, those of you that have familiarity with the venture capital business will know that our margin for failure is much, much lower than it would be in a sort of typical external venture capital environment. But we believe that, you know, given that Cisco has an established brand, has established, you know, sales force and sales relationships and customer relationships, and has, you know, numerous leverage points, we believe that that mitigates a significant amount of the risk that, you know, external standalone startups face. And so we believe that our success percentage can be higher than, you know, would be sort of typical in an external venture environment. Now, of course, the question is, you know, how do you get to 20, you know, emerging technology investments? And so we've done a bunch of math and work with external venture capital firms. And we believe we really have to get about 1,000 good ideas to find the 20 that we'll invest in to get the 15 that'll be successful to create our multi-billion dollar revenue target, you know, over the next 5 to 7 years. So, you know, I always used to think that good ideas were cheap and grew on trees, but now that I'm looking, you know, at having to help find 1,000 ideas, finding 1,000 good ideas is actually quite difficult. So I thought it might be beneficial to spend a little bit of time telling you about how we actually look for these ideas and then how we decide and take these ideas to market. Now, of course, you know, we have a great sort of mission and a great strategy that fits well into the corporate priorities for Cisco, but as Albert Einstein pointed out, you know, vision without execution is hallucination. So I'm going to give you a sense of sort of what our execution looks like. Now, before I do that, you know, I just want to point out one thing, that by definition, an emerging technology, as we sort of started this discussion, is a, you know, new market opportunity for Cisco. So when we say 1,000 ideas, what we're really looking for is new adjacent markets, but not businesses that Cisco are in today. And, of course, that, you know, raises the bar significantly for finding those 1,000 ideas. And in fact, when we look at any idea, we really have three criteria. And two of them are quite easy. One of them is a little bit more difficult. So the easy ones are a, you know, emerging technology needs to have $1 billion revenue potential in 5 to 7 years. So that means we have to target very large market opportunities and, you know, build a business plan that we believe will achieve $1 billion in revenue for Cisco in a 5 to 7 year period. The second one is sort of an easy one, too, in that an emerging technology needs to leverage Cisco's core competency in some way, shape, or form. So that typically means that, you know, it uses the network as a platform and may involve, you know, some form of communications or IT. But the third criteria is much harder, which is it has to be a market that Cisco isn't in. And so if we find an idea, terrific idea, let's say in the security space or in the data center space, we would actually take that idea and hand it over to the technology group that is responsible for that business area. So, you know, again, by definition, we're really looking for brand new market opportunities. So let me give you a sort of a quick sense of our internal venture framework, and I'm on slide 8 for those of you that are following along. The first thing we do is we have to find ideas, and we have a couple of different ways that we do that. Certainly we do a level of top-down planning, and we look for industry trends and market trends. We talk with venture capitalists. We go to conferences. You know, we talk with industry analysts. But one of the more interesting and innovative things that we've done is we've tapped two sources of, you know, broad populations. So one is the 60,000 strong Cisco employee base. And we have an internal wiki called the iZone Wiki, which basically enables any employee to submit an idea for a new business. So now if you're a, you know, aspiring entrepreneur or innovator and, you know, you're an engineer and you're working on a project, but on your drive home from work you have this sort of lightning bolt that hits you with a terrific idea, you can actually go to the iZone and submit your idea, and we have a staff of people whose job it is to go through the iZone and actually, you know, qualify, you know, ideas. Now, as it turns out, ideas are oftentimes not whole ideas. In other words, you may have an engineer with a terrific technology breakthrough, but the market, you know, that they think they can target either isn't very sensible, or maybe they don't even know what market to go after. Similarly, you might have a, you know, a marketeer who has a terrific market opportunity, but the technology idea that they want to use to achieve that market opportunity isn't actually as good as it could be. And so part of what our team does is to take parts of ideas and people who have, you know, partially formed ideas and actually stick them together and get them to work collaboratively to try to create a better whole idea that we can actually create into a business. The second source of ideas is something that we just introduced a couple of weeks ago. We've created something called the Cisco iPrize, and this is a global competition to which is open to, you know, entrepreneurs and innovators anywhere in the globe to submit their ideas in sort of an iZone-like Web 2.0 blog or wiki, and then to collaborate with each other and through the course of three stages of competition win an opportunity to basically join Cisco as founders of an emerging technology. And, you know, in a short 2 weeks, we have over 500 ideas posted to our site. We have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people who are contributing and commenting on each other's idea and actually really using Web 2.0 technology as the basis for global collaboration. Now, once we find an idea that we think is pretty interesting, then we go through what's called the filter stage. And in the filter stage, we start to look at, you know, refining the idea. We start to look at technical feasibility. We look at the business plan. We look at the competitive landscape. We look at the fit for Cisco. And we go through basically, you know, multiple stages of filtering. And really, there are three sort of critical stages. One stage involves what we call the ET board, of which I'm a member. And the ET board essentially is like the venture partnership that votes on ideas and, you know, the ones that we want to invest in. The second filter is our chief development officer, Charlie Giancarlo, and then the third filter is our finance group to ensure that, you know, we have the funds to make the investments that we want to make. Once we've, you know, gone through the filter process and decided to start a new business, then we go through initiation, and that means we find the founding team, if we don't have a founding team already. The founding team takes the business plan. Obviously, they do additional refinements to it. They, you know, hire the initial engineering staff, and they start to create their, you know, their first product. And through the end of the initiation stage, then we are ready to launch this new product to market, and we go into acceleration, where now we're actually trying to sell this new product line and technology, you know, in the market and to grow it as rapidly as possible. Now, over the course of, let's say, 18 to 24 months, we get to a point, you know, or maybe 36 months at the outside, we get to a point where we look to either graduate or eliminate this business. And so the key criteria there are, you know, do we see a path for this business to grow to $1 billion in revenue in the time frame that we're looking for? Or, you know, for some reason, did we, you know, get the market timing wrong? Did we, you know, not, you know, did we just, you know, sort of miss the mark in some way? And so if the business we don't believe has the potential we were looking for, we would eliminate it. And eliminate it for us generally means folding it into some existing technology group inside the company where there's a reasonable adjacency. So we would retain the intellectual property. We'd retain certainly the core engineering team and recycle everybody else. But, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be a standalone business any longer. The hopefully happier situation, the one that we want to happen three quarters of the time, is to graduate this business into either another technology group as a standalone business or potentially as a technology group on its own. In that case, it leaves the emerging technologies infrastructure and just becomes its own standalone business. And so through each of the stages in the venture framework, we provide a range of both, you know, guidance and best practice, but also operational help. So, for example, in my team, we get mostly involved in the accelerate phase where we're actually launching and taking to market these products, and, you know, we provide hands-on operational assistance to, you know, market each of these new emerging technologies. So, you know, what we're doing we think is relatively unique. It's certainly been written about and highlighted by not only Jeff Moore, but Harvard Business Review wrote an article about us not that long ago. And we believe that, you know, we're trying to achieve something that very few companies have been successful at, which is a, you know, a process and a discipline around harnessing, internal innovation that leads to actually tangible business results. So with that as a background, let me give you a sense of what we've achieved so far and take you into a little bit of, you know, detail about our emerging technologies portfolio. As I mentioned, we have four businesses that are in the market today, and we have five businesses that are incubating. And the incubating businesses have not been announced, so you can expect to see announcements on each of those businesses over the next, you know, 6 to 18 months as they, you know, get ready to come to market. But let me talk a little bit about the four that we already have in the market. So the first one is the digital media system, and that is a product line for capturing, managing, and delivering video over your IP network to different types of endpoints. And today we support two different types of endpoints. One is a desktop video portal, and then the other one is digital signage, or you might think of it as video signage. The second company or business in our portfolio is something called iPix. And iPix enables interoperability between radios, like radio systems, and voice systems, and achieves interoperability basically between any kind of radio and any kind of voice system. And it's used mostly in public safety, sort of first responder scenarios to enable communications interoperability. The third business is sort of an interesting one. We are, you know, targeting the physical security market initially with a video surveillance offering, and we believe that there is a significant market transition going on in video surveillance where companies are going to move very rapidly from sort of analog, closed circuit, you know, CCTV-based deployments to a digital IP-based deployment of their video surveillance systems, and so we believe that that's a tremendous market opportunity for Cisco. And then the last one is sort of the flagship of the emerging technology portfolio, one I'm sure you've probably all heard about, hopefully you've seen, which is Cisco Telepresence. So if you were to look at these four businesses and say, okay, well, what is common across the four? There really isn't anything common across the four other than we believe that each of these can achieve $1 billion in revenue in 5 to 7 years for Cisco. And, you know, in the case of, you know, three of these businesses, we're trying to create new market opportunities. And in the case of, you know, video surveillance, we're trying to disrupt a, you know, established existing marketplace. So let me spend a couple more minutes just telling you about each of these businesses in a little bit more detail, give you a little bit more color, and then I'd be very happy to open it up to questions about, you know, anything we've talked about. So I'll start with Telepresence. You know, like I say, this is sort of the flagship of the emerging technologies portfolio. This is from the ground up Cisco innovation. We have over 50 patents either filed or pending on various of the technology advancements that we've made in creating Telepresence. You might be surprised to learn that more of our patents are related to audio processing than video processing. And we're very proud of not only the video quality that we're able to achieve, you know, sort of full HD, 1080p video resolution, but also the quality of the spatial sound that we can provide in a telepresence room. And, you know, we believe that, you know, that there is significant value in the innovations that we've created, you know, as a frame of reference. Our video resolution is twice the competition. So we run 1080p versus 720p for the sort of the next best competitor. Our latency is generally half of our competition, so even though we're running twice as many bits, our latency across the network is half as much. And you know, we're sort of very proud of the fact that our network consumption is also half of what our typical competitors are, even though they're at half the resolution. So, you know, we believe that not only on a, you know, business basis, but also on a technology basis, we've really achieved a lot with Telepresence. Now, let me just spend a minute and tell you a little bit about why customers choose telepresence. You know, the sort of immediate reaction we get from a lot of people, well, it must be, you know, cost savings, travel reduction. But actually, what we've learned is that what our customers are doing is, you know, they're using the travel budget as the way to pay for telepresence. Because, you know, when you buy anything, it has to come from a budget. So they're tapping the, you know, they're reducing the travel budget in order to pay for their telepresence deployment. But the actual, you know, return on investment is calculated based on revenue creation by transforming core business processes to take advantage of the telepresence, you know, experience. And the reason that they can do this is, you know, telepresence is unlike any other kind of video communication experience in that it is a reasonable substitute for a live face-to-face communication. So, you know, in areas where you would have only relied on face-to-face communication, you can now substitute telepresence. And that allows you to actually do some very interesting transformations of core business processes. So to kind of give you an example, and if you look at slide 11, you know, we've got a range of customers that have deployed this for various reasons. I'll highlight just a couple of them. You know, at Media Saturn, which is an electronics retailer in Europe, they're using telepresence to expand more rapidly into new market opportunities in Eastern Europe. And they believe that by using telepresence, they can reduce their time to market to open up, you know, operations in new countries by collaborating between their local market teams in Eastern Europe and their established corporate teams in Western Europe, combining best practices from a corporate perspective with local market knowledge, and that they will cut off months and in some cases years in time to market. And as of course you can imagine, if you're a retail chain and you can get a retail footprint in a new country faster than your competitors, that can be, you know, tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue that you might not have seen otherwise. And telepresence is so critical to Media Saturn that it's actually been, its use has been mandated by their board of directors. Now, another example is Wachovia Bank, which is really using this for accelerating decision making. Wachovia is the fastest growing bank in the United States right now, and one of the reasons that they're growing so quickly is they're acquiring other financial institutions. They just bought AG Edwards a few months ago. And so, you know, what they're doing is really looking at how do they coordinate multiple headquarter operations and, you know, get key executives together to make, you know, highly sensitive, critical business decisions quicker. And, you know, an interesting thing about that is it's not just the time it takes to get the two executives together to make the critical decision, but it's also, you know, enabling each of their teams to make all the subsequent decisions. So the decision latency, if you want to think of it that way, you know, is very critical, you know, as it goes from the very senior executives all the way down through the organization. And then as a final sort of customer example, Procter & Gamble is using this both for time to market and vendor intimacy, and they're deploying over 50 systems in their initial rollout. And what they're doing is to deploy telepresence globally to enable collaboration across their various marketing groups for new product introduction. And, you know, when Procter & Gamble introduces, let's say, a new kind of detergent, they need to coordinate, you know, their marketing teams and their branding teams and their advertising teams on a global basis. And that coordination to ensure that they get the right level of nuance with local market needs and requirements and customs, right, as well as sort of the corporate brand strategy, marketing strategy, et cetera, typically it's taken months. And they believe that with telepresence, they will be able to meet more effectively and more quickly with teams across the globe, both internal teams and some of their external vendors, to accelerate, you know, product introductions by, you know, months and months, in some cases quarters. And of course, you know, if you're a company the size of Procter & Gamble, you know, bringing a new version of Tide to market 6 months, you know, earlier, again, is worth, you know, millions, if not tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, when you measure it across a global basis. So, you know, in each of these cases, these customers have chosen, you know, very specific, unique technical attributes of our telepresence experience as sort of the key driver behind their purchase decision. And so we're very happy that, you know, the unique, you know, capabilities of Cisco telepresence are resulting in, you know, purchase decisions by customers to help them transform their business. Okay, let me spend a few minutes on the digital media system. As I mentioned before, this is a product line which helps you capture, manage, and deliver video to both desktops and to digital signage. That video can be transmitted either live or on demand. In a sort of branch operation, it can be cached locally. It actually can be cached on the digital sign itself or streamed live. So this lends itself to a variety of different applications, both internal and external. The internal applications are more typically around internal communications, executive broadcasts, company events, and also for training. And so, a lot of companies use this to provide, video training for their employees, less so in sort of a regulated environment, but more for sort of informal knowledge sharing, best practices, policies and procedure updates, new product introductions, those types of things. The external uses are much broader. For desktop communications, for desktop video, it's more about corporate communication to external audiences. I'm sure most of you in the audience have listened to the newsroom at Cisco, which is powered by the Cisco Digital Media System. And then, also externally, you might use this for digital signage, where you are actually displaying video on a digital display, and that could be for, various types of sales and marketing purposes, merchandising, upsell, cross-sell, customer experience, reducing perceived wait times. It can be used actually in break rooms for internal communications and training. In different types of venues, government buildings and stadiums, et cetera, it can be used for what they call wayfinding or directional signage, or for providing, internal communications for disaster response. Here's the nearest exit, because the fire alarm went off, that kind of stuff. Now, with the digital media system, each of our customers has really, chosen one or more sort of critical business attributes of deploying this, whether it be, improved marketing, for introducing products better, for improving internal communications, for enabling live broadcasts, or improving customer experience or breaking news. And as you can see, our customer base, if you look at slide 15, stretches across a broad range of customer types. This product is incredibly horizontal. And gets used, not just by retail and financial services retail organizations, but also by, large enterprises. So Coca-Cola Enterprises uses this for internal executive communications to the company. Norsk Tipping is the national lottery system of Norway. They've deployed 4,000 digital signs to update point-of-sale locations with winning numbers, new lottery games, what the size of the jackpot is, et cetera. And as you can probably imagine, since, the size of the jackpot in a weekly lottery changes, almost by the hour, they're able to achieve a tremendous amount of cost savings just on, information updates for what the latest, lottery jackpot is across their various games. So, and again, in each of these cases, some of the sort of key attributes of the digital media system have been, key drivers of the purchase decision. At Norsk Tipping, it was the ability to use the network to centralize the information, the distribution of information. In the case of some of our smaller customers like Baptala Engineering College or the Community College of Southern Nevada, it was about ease of use and being able to have end users actually drive their digital media system. In the case of Accent Jobs for People in Europe, which is a hiring agency, it was the support for what we call a digital media player, which is an appliance that is designed to replace a PC or DVD player to power a digital display for signage. All right, so moving quickly, let me move on to video surveillance. What we're doing here is actually very simple. We're really replacing the existing analog CCTV surveillance infrastructure with a IP alternative. And in our case, what we do is we allow you to selectively replace your analog infrastructure so that you don't have to do sort of a forklift upgrade of your entire infrastructure all at once. You can do it in sort of a nice, managed, progressive way. Now, when you move surveillance into an IP environment, some interesting things happen. The Security Operations Center, which if you look at the slide 17, which generally has had to manage their own infrastructure, becomes now responsible just for surveillance and safety. And all of the endpoints, whether they be monitoring stations or cameras, can now be managed as endpoints on your Ethernet network from the network operations team. your video storage, which today would typically be on, you know, VCR or whatever, can now be, you know, stored digitally, and you can actually leverage your data center and stick video on your stand or whatever else. And you get a, you know, great deal of increased operational flexibility, because now you can run security operations on either a centralized and or distributed fashion, from your campus to branches to mobile sites and outdoor sites. And as you can see from the slide 18, part of the way that we do this is we enable you to have gateways that convert analog camera feeds into an IP stream, and we can actually do the reverse, which is to take the digital IP stream and display it on your existing analog monitor, keyboard, and joystick. In the middle of the cloud, if you will, that IP stream can be, you know, sent to digital storage in addition to a live monitor. And you can actually open up, you know, new applications by taking advantage of, you know, a software client, a web-based software client, to access video surveillance footage. And you can use it for non-surveillance activities like, you know, looking at, you know, retail operations or wait times or staffing requirements, et cetera. So if you look at slide 19, you can get a sense of who some of our customers are. Certainly a lot of government implementations, you know, regional transit in Chicago and in other areas, Maryland. You know, also we have a very significant presence in Las Vegas casinos, and as an example of that, the Venetian is one of our customers. They have over 1,500 cameras installed both on their casino floor as well as their hotel and retail operations. And there, you know, they are, you know, as you can imagine, video surveillance is as mission critical to a casino as anybody, because if a camera goes down, that part of the casino actually has to be shut down. So we're sort of particularly proud of our presence in casinos, you know, dozens of casinos around the country, because we know that, you know, they have the highest standards and requirements for video surveillance of any customer type. All right, I want to make sure I leave time for questions, so I'm going to cover sort of our last existing emerging technology, which is called IPICS. And what IPICS does is it really enables communications interoperability across different types of organizations or agencies. It's typically used for public safety sort of first responder operations. You know, if you have a four-alarm fire, you know, you may have multiple fire departments plus police and emergency services and even, you know, Homeland Security organizations showing up at a particular site. And today, those people have, you know, radio systems that they control themselves. So there isn't necessarily, in fact, usually there is no interoperability between the radio systems from the people that are showing up on site. And what IPICS does is it basically bridges the networks, right, radio networks and phone networks that these organizations may be using to allow them to communicate between them. So you can essentially create virtual talk groups across different radio systems and telephones and mobile phones, et cetera, to create, you know, the appearance of a single communication system across multiple disparate implementations. And then, of course, when you do that, you can actually extend that into, you know, businesses or the community. So at Cisco, for example, we're able to, you know, use our IP phone to communicate with a security guard, you know, who's carrying a radio because of our IPICS technology. And the way this works is the product has sort of a core server infrastructure that provides a sort of drag-and-drop operations view of all the participants, and you can create virtual talk groups and define policies around communications, both inbound and outbound. So if an emergency happens, you can initiate a policy to dial out four people, join them into a virtual talk group, add this radio person on or these different radio groups, and you know, enable interoperability and communications that way. And then we reach out to a variety of different communication systems through a series of gateways. And so that can be IP phones, both regular landline and cellular or mobile phones, handheld push-to-talk devices like a Nextel device, various types of land mobile radios, and even things like SMS and paging and email are accessible from the IPICS system. So, again, most of the customers for this are public safety organizations. So to kind of give you a sense of who some of these are, you can sort of see we have, you know, people like the Forestry Commission in the state of Georgia, the Virginia State Police. We have a couple of universities, including Bryant University, because universities often act almost like a little city in the sense that they have their own police force and emergency response teams. Boulder County is a very successful customer of ours, where they've linked the communication systems for various municipalities across the county as well as the county government themselves. iPix was used for the national championship game at the Fiesta Bowl this past January to coordinate communications between stadium operations, the local police, fire, and emergency services, the county organizations, and the federal organizations that were on site in case of things like terrorist threats. So iPix has been, you know, very well deployed across a variety of government implementations to enable, you know, mission-critical communications interoperability for, you know, crisis communications and operational improvements. So with that, you know, I'd like to make sure that we leave a few minutes here for questions. I hope you've enjoyed the overview of Cisco's emerging technology strategy, our internal venture framework, and then sort of a peek into some of our existing businesses. And so at this point, I'll throw the floor open to questions from anybody in the audience.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, press star 2. Please press star 1 to begin.
Don't be shy.
Your first question comes from the line of Roberta Fox. Please proceed.
Yes, good afternoon, folks. It was really exciting as a fellow entrepreneur to hear about what you guys are talking about. My two questions, are, how are you going to nurture and maintain the entrepreneurial spirit and not just the ideas within the corporation? And also, have you thought about reaching out to entrepreneurs and forming an entrepreneur council, like similar, but maybe not in a digital format?
Okay, so that's a very interesting, both of the questions are very interesting. So first of all, on sort of the, you know, the sort of the culture and spirit piece, you know, every year Cisco sort of sets out their, you know, both sort of priorities and initiatives, but also, you know, sort of the mission statement and you know, sort of guiding principles of the company. And, you know, innovation has been a consistent theme of John Chambers. And, you know, of course, that's where it all starts. So, you know, we have a heavy internal emphasis on, you know, on maintaining a spirit and culture of innovation and encouraging and rewarding innovation. And, you know, things like the formation of the Emerging Technologies, you know, group was specifically, you know, in part, not just about long-term growth strategy, but also about, you know, finding a retention mechanism for entrepreneurial talent, you know, people that have interesting new business ideas, but who want to stay inside of Cisco. And so, you know, I think you'll see us do, you know, other things in the future, you know, that may be completely different, but that are also geared towards, you know, encouraging, recognizing, and rewarding, you know, innovation and sort of that entrepreneurial spirit. With respect to sort of forming an entrepreneur advisory board or committee, I think that's a very interesting idea. One of the things that, you know, we are doing with the Cisco iPrize is really using this as sort of a first shot at, you know, encouraging kind of the wisdom of the crowds and mass collaboration as a way of harnessing innovation. And so we'll be doing a couple of things as part of that. One is we'll have a judging panel that will blend both internal and external judges who will actually look at sort of the finalist submissions and, you know, help choose which one of those opportunities will become our next emerging technology. But one of our sort of notions has been to continue, you know, sort of keep that group going and to keep maybe not the competition going, but the site going so that if people want, they can continue to, you know, submit ideas to Cisco and, you know, we would continue to, you know, look for ideas and look at hiring, you know, teams of founders that have, you know, interesting propositions, but maybe not have the sort of the competition angle in it.
Well, the thing about the Entrepreneur Council would be neat is they could also, you can take the ideas, but you can also give back skills and knowledge to the entrepreneurs that they may be lacking as well, David.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea, absolutely. And, you know, if you follow the iPrize competition, you'll see that we're actually doing that. So, you know, not only are we soliciting ideas, but we're providing feedback, and particularly once we choose the semifinals group, we'll be working with them in a hands-on fashion to help them refine their ideas, look at the real business opportunity, assess the market, you know, et cetera. And so, you know, they will be at least, you know, learning, you know, whatever best practices Cisco can lend them, you know, to help improve their ideas. And, you know, even if they don't, you know, if they aren't selected as the winner, they may not get hired by Cisco to create a new emerging technology, but they'll walk out with, you know, a really good business plan for an idea they believe in.
Great. I'll spread the word through my Canadian entrepreneurs, and hopefully we got some Canadian winners. Thanks.
Absolutely. We'd love to see that. It's www.cisco.com/iPrize. So
thanks.
Check it out. Great. Other questions?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, press star 1 to ask a question. Your next question comes from the line of Becky Watson. Please proceed.
First of all, thank you for the briefing. It's been great. I have a question related to communication service providers. On slide 11, you do mention BT, Sprint, and Rogers. So I'd like for you to go into a little bit of detail on that. But then my overall question is, this seems more focused towards enterprise-type applications. So how do you see this program fitting in with communication service providers' infrastructure and services for them in particular?
Sure, absolutely. So that's a great question. So let me address sort of the first part first, which is with telepresence, we've had a number of service providers who have been among the sort of early purchasers of telepresence. It's sort of a natural thought. Obviously, they appreciate, the ability to communicate. They have great internal networks. And so they've been among the, as a group, they've been among the earlier adopters of telepresence. But I think your question was really about, how interested is the Emerging Technologies Group in creating businesses where our primary customer and or channel might be service providers. And
correct.
With telepresence, we've engaged with a number of service providers, both as what we call an advanced technology partner or deployment partner. We partner with them because we, expect them to provide the wide area network bandwidth that our customers need to deploy telepresence on a global basis. So that's specific to telepresence. But on a more general basis, the fact that the first four emerging technologies are really focused primarily on, business buyers is somewhat serendipitous. It wasn't sort of intentional. And, among the next five incubating ETs, at least one of them is specifically targeting service providers as a customer and partner. And, Cisco looks at sort of, three broad segments of our business, right? Enterprise and sort of commercial buyers, service providers, and consumers. And, ETG, the Emerging Technologies Group, is chartered to look for business ideas in any customer segment that we serve. So I think you can expect that, you'll see some things that, are businesses for the consumer segment, some businesses that are businesses for the service provider segment, and businesses that are for enterprises.
Great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. That's a great question. Any other questions?
No other questions at this time.
Okay. There was one question that got sort of emailed in, and the question was, three of the ETs are focused on video. Is that intentional, and how does that fit into Cisco's video strategy? So let me spend just a couple of minutes of that. Again, the fact that three of the ETs are focused on video is, again, somewhat serendipitous. We are, in general, just looking for really good adjacent market opportunities. But having said that, Cisco, of course, is very interested in video. We, have made that one of our sort of 20 top priorities for this year and, for next. And we believe that, the time is now right for video to become a pervasive media in all phases of our life. And, of course, you're certainly seeing that broadly from a consumer standpoint, the rise of user-generated video and YouTube and all of that kind of thing. And we believe that that is rapidly creeping into enterprises, first in the, in the form of telepresence, but, desktop video is taking off. I think we're starting to see some very early things, trends happening around user-contributed video, video surveillance moving onto the IP network would be sort of another example of that. And so we believe that, video is going to be an incredible growth opportunity for Cisco and also an incredible investment area for our customers. And an interesting little factoid for those of you that follow this. Right now, over half of the traffic on Cisco's network is video, and it's increasing. And, some of it is telepresence, but it's a lot of, video on demand, a lot of desktop video, a little bit of video surveillance. It's a whole broad mix of things. And we believe that trend will we'll move on to our customers, and that our customers are going to start to see an increasing amount of their traffic become video. And, as a consequence, we're making significant investments across the entire spectrum of, the video stack, if you will. And for those of you that will be at our annual analyst conference, the Seascape conference, coming up here in about 3 or 4 weeks, I'll actually be hosting a panel with two of the executive leaders of our video initiative inside the company, Martin DeBeer from the technology side and Chris Dedicote from the commercial side. And the three of us will be on stage. And so I encourage you to, if you're interested in kind of what Cisco is doing and how we think about video, I'd encourage you to register for our session. We're going to have a very lively and spirited discussion. I can trust you. You can trust me on that. Great. Unless there are any other questions, I'll sort of do last call. But otherwise, we'll just wrap up.
As a reminder, press *1 to ask a question. You have no questions at this time.
Okay. Well, in that case, thank you very much. Gia, I don't know if you have any final words for our audience, but I want to thank you all for being on the call, and I thought some of your questions were excellent, so thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much, everybody, and if you have any follow-up questions, I think I've heard or know most of you. My email address is gfelice, and that's F-I-L-I-C-E, at cisco.com. I'm also off the cisco.com web under analyst relations. You can direct any of your questions or comments to me, and I will get with David and the rest of the teams and follow up. But I wanted to thank you for your time today.
Great. Oh, and when's our next call, Gia?
Let's see. Our next call, for those of you that are coming to Seascape, this is a kickoff series that David has done around the emerging technologies area. We will be taking each four of them beginning the month of December, right after Seascape, and I believe the next call will be the latter part of December. So each of the emerging technologies areas that David has kicked off to you today, we have a very specific speaker series set up through December through March, and you'll be getting that. You also got that as part of the invite, and you can attend those as well. So we're going to take a deep dive into each one of the emerging technologies that David set up for us today. So December is when the next one will be.
Perfect. Well, hopefully some of you will be able to attend that session, and we'll look forward to seeing you then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the presentation. You may now disconnect. Good day.